I first discovered Nina Hagen by buying a promising-looking four-song EP on one of the regular Monday shopping excursions from the Interlochen Arts Academy. I had previously had good luck blind buying an Oingo Boingo EP and felt lucky. As it turns out, my luck held until the next time I tried it, when I purchased a horrific, or is that an horrific, EP by some cheeseheads named New Music, with a K, which was so laughably bad that I swore off the format forever after that. But Nina Hagen blew my ears off. Nina is a German punk diva, famous for her operatic range and her four-hour concerts, and for not shying away from anything or anybody. She has an extremely powerful voice and seemed to be the epitome of punk with her black leather jacket, badly dyed rat's nest of hair, and fuck you too demeanor. But her songs were inventive and exciting and far from the simple-minded three-chord thrash that was the popular currency among punks at the time. Behind her growling and screeching voice, her band played incredibly tight arrangements that would stop and start on a Deutschmark and would swerve violently from German Hofbräu Oompa to possessed reggae. I was enchanted. It didn't even matter that I couldn't understand a word she said. I once briefly considered getting help translating it from Herr Helmers, the German teacher and father of two of my best friends, but I was pretty sure that if I did so, I would be banned from their house forever. I may not have understood it, but I could tell it was bad. Nina Hagen had a fair following in Germany and the rest of Europe.
Einen recht schönen guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
And that EP, which collected tracks from two albums and also showcased her versions of established songs by The Tubes and Lena Lovitch, was put out to test the American waters.
mich alten Sumpf wie meine Omi. Ich halt die Glotze an, die dort swats everyone. Ich glotz von Ost nach West, so von dir. Ich kann mich gar nicht entscheiden, ist alles so schön bunt hier. Ich glotz den Fall.
Finding them suitably warm, her next full album was released domestically. It came out during the summer after I graduated high school and was called, provocatively enough, Nun Sex Monk Rock. There was a movement gaining ground at that time to ban controversial records. Well, actually, the movement, spearheaded by internet inventor Al Gore's wife Tipper, was to label controversial records as such, but the defenders of free speech recognized that that was a shortcut to censorship and fought it in court. Many musicians, such as Frank Zappa, also testified to the absurdity and ignominy of censoring music, or indeed any art, and I was right there behind them.
I am gross and perverted, I'm obsessed and deranged. I have existed for years, but very little has changed. I'm the tool of the government and industry too, for I am destined to rule and regulate you. I may be vile and pernicious, but you can't look away. Say, I'm the best you can get. Have you guessed me yet? I'm the slime oozing out from your TV set. You will obey me while I lead you and eat the garbage that I feed you until the day that we don't need you. Don't go for help, no one will aid you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold, and you will do as you are told until the rights to you are sold.
That's right, folks, don't touch that dial.
Well, I am the slime from the New York, who's laying along on the living room floor. I am the slime from the New
But I suddenly understood that fear of freedom of expression for the first time when I turned the stereo on and put the needle to the first track of Nun Sex Monk Rock. The album starts off innocuously enough, with some tinkling bells followed by a slightly jungly tom-tom riff. Nina began speaking in a perfectly reasonable tone of voice.
Once upon a time, when Jesus was walking down his way on earth, he met this man
who was possessed by a demon.
Uh-oh.
And Jesus asked the man, "Why do you speak so funny? And why do you behave like that?" And the man said,
"Well, Jesus, because I'm possessed by a demon."
"God!"
Jesus said.
And the demon went out into the pig, and the pig was running away, screaming! And the man was free. Do you see? If you only could believe, Jesus said, everything is possible for those who believe.
I have never been so scared of a record in my life. I sat, slack-jawed, listening to one depraved song after another. I could not believe that such a thing was ever recorded, never mind released. I wanted to personally buy up every copy and burn it because something that powerful and that evil could wind up in the wrong hands with some drastic consequences and could severely damage somebody with a weak moral or musical constitution. The tracks were barely songs, more like musical skeletons for Nina to flesh out with her many layers of guttural utterances and banshee screams and terrifyingly nonsensical lyrics. This was clearly drug music, but it wasn't the hippie-go-lucky, everybody-must-get-stoned pothead music. This was brutal, dark, terrifying, razor-blade-and-needles-in-your-eyeball music. One of the songs, Smackjack, was about the horrors of heroin and is so convincing that it must have been written by somebody who knows from the inside, somebody bent over by the weight of a very large monkey. The next year, my best friend Eric dismantled some Sugar Smacks and Apple Jacks cartons he pilfered from the cafeteria to spell out Smack Jack on his dorm room door, something that impressed me and worried the resident advisors no end.
You've never could have thought or guessed that things could get so far out of I'm gonna see you coming down in a cold sweat, running.
Each song on Nunsex Monk Rock is more terrifying than the last, and the album wanders all over the archaic map, from UFOs to tarot to Rastafarianism to God knows what else.
Materialized.
Cosmos.
In any case, we are in space. 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 In space.
The tracks are densely woven, with hundreds of voices swirling around in a hallucinogenic haze, and the hand-drawn lyric sheets, which bear scant resemblance to the final songs, are fearsome in their disjointed imagery and maniacal doodling. Perhaps most disconcerting is Nina's frequent and seemingly sincere references to religion. She growls the story of Jesus and the possessed pig, and ends by saying, "If only you'd believe, everything is possible for those who believe," while her head spins around and she vomits fire. In one song, named after and sung to her daughter, Cosma Shiva, she even asserts that God is your father. I can't help but think that this is just the sort of witness-bearing that the Catholic Church does not appreciate. Clearly, this woman was insane and dangerous.
God is your father.
I soon dropped my desire to save the world from Nina, and in fact have grown to love the album. But I have yet to find a scarier, more boiled-down essence of evil, and I hope I never do. It seems each generation has their artists who push the moral envelope, horrifying the parents while thrilling the kids, in no small part because the parents are so horrified. Whether it's the Rolling Stones and their sympathy for the devil, or Marilyn Manson's provocative posing, there's always something grotesque going on the edges of pop culture, and somebody always thinks they've gone too far, and it's their moral responsibility to do something about it. One of my favorite shock bands is Florida's Cannibal Corpse. I've never actually heard their music, but admire their breathtakingly gruesome song titles, Hammer Smashed Face, Entrails Ripped from a Virgin's Cunt, Dismembered and Molested, and their big hit, Fucked with a Knife. Like I said, I've never actually heard any of these songs, but I'm sure they can't live down to their titles. Although there are many worthwhile tracks on Nonsex Monk Rock, only Iki Maska, a blindingly boring riff on Peter Gunn, has no redeeming qualities for me whatsoever, I especially like this track, Dread Love. One of the perkiest and most accessible numbers on the album, it nevertheless showcases her bizarre and disturbing layered lyrics and incredibly powerful stratospheric vocal range. I especially like the ending of the song, with the band disintegrating while she repeats the name of the album.
Non-sex monk rock.
As it turned out, Nina Hagen was unwilling or unable to maintain this particular unique form of heavy metal minimalism tone poetry, and her next album found her dabbling in dance music, of all things, with Giorgio Moroder, the premier producer of European synthetic dance music, known for cracking the code to electronica 15 years early with his production of Donna Summer's techno hit, I Feel Love.
Durch die Clubs ziehen und es kommt mir immer vor, als wäre ich die Nightclub. Das ist die reinste Wahrheit und ich schwöre siebenfach. New York, ich will ein Penthouse haben, direkt unterm Dach. Und nach meiner Show, da bin ich immer so froh und alle gehen mir in die Disco. Wir gehen in die nächste Disco. Eine Disco nach der anderen Disco. Und wackeln im Takt. Der neueste Nightclub macht auf heute Nacht.
New York, New York. New York, New York. New York, New York. New York, New York. New
York. To this day, Nonsex Monk Rock remains an unparalleled achievement in densely woven, hallucinatory, satanic drug music. And, as a bizarre side note, all the synthesizers on the album were played by David Letterman's cool cat musical sidekick, Paul Schaefer. I always wanted to get invited onto Late Night so I could ask Paul what he thought of those sessions.
Over. future is now!
When I was in high school, I spent most of my time in the dorm. But during vacations, I moved back into my room at home. My house was an unusual structure, having been originally built as a two-story duplex to be used only during the burgeoning summer months of the National Music Camp. Being a duplex, there was no way to get from the first floor to the second without walking around outside and using the fire escape. A bit inconvenient during the summer, but completely impractical during the winter when snow covered the ground for up to 6 months straight. So when they winterized the house for us, they put in a folding staircase to connect the two floors on the inside. Unfortunately, the result of this was that my room became, in essence, a hallway. There was no way to go from one floor to the other without walking through my bedroom. Plus, the washing machine and dryer were set into a little alcove at the foot of my bed. It was like living in a train station, and I had absolutely no privacy. That was one thing when I was 9, but by the time I was in my late teens, it was definitely a cramp in my style. One day, my folks were out, and my buddy Alan happened to stop by to hang.
Get high on yourself, baby. Hey, hey, hey. Because I love you. Forever.
Something wrong with
something wrong with you.
I was painting houses that summer and was completely miserable, and he worked the front desk in a nearby hotel.
First real change. You a revolution. You a believer.
As was his wont, Alan had brought over a big bag of weed, which was the only thing that was keeping us both sane that summer.
Hans, the prophet. Hans, my name is Hans.
I am the prophet.
I pulled out my trusty bong, put Nunsex Monk Rock on, and we dutifully got to work. I had the stereo up so loud that I didn't hear the car pull up outside the house. Since they had never paved the road in front of our house, I usually got about a 30 seconds heads up before the front door opened. And I wasn't aware that my folks, by which I mean my mom and Frank, the man who would soon become my stepfather, had come home until they walked through my bedroom door on their way upstairs. Alan was in mid-toke, and subtly threw the bong across the room while coughing up a gigantic plume of blue smoke. Smooth. After an awkward moment, my mom and Frank continued upstairs, and Alan and I ran out of the house and stayed out until I was sure my folks were asleep. The next morning, I was expecting a talk, and sure enough, right after breakfast, they invited me to come sit down with them in the living room. Oh boy, here it comes. I was sure I was going to get chewed out and grounded forever, if not thrown in jail, but was surprised to discover that they guardedly approved that I smoked pot. While not necessarily condoning it, they nevertheless couldn't condemn it, as they had both experimented with it themselves and were glad I was doing something to blow off the tension of working a terrible job and waiting for college to begin. They only wished I didn't freak out when they came home and didn't try to hide it. Not exactly the response I was expecting. It reminded me of the time I was busted for stealing Playboys from the neighbor and ended up being offered a subscription to the magazine myself, which I politely declined. I had the kind of folks that other kids just shook their heads when they heard about.
Ich weiß, es wird einmal ein Wunder
I told Alan about it, and a few nights later, we were again sitting in my room smoking when I heard their car drive up and park outside. I suppressed my startled reflex, and we sat there, trying to be cool, while we heard them come into the house. They walked through my room, nodded, and continued upstairs. My heart was in my throat, but Alan urged me to invite them to join us. I shook my head, but he pressed on. Come on, man, they said it was cool. So I climbed up the ladder to their room and asked if they wanted to join us. They shot looks at each other, shrugged, and said, sure, we'll be right down. I went downstairs, nodded to Alan, who grinned, and we all moved into the living room. In theory, this was a good idea. We were all adults, more or less, and we were all cool, more or less, so it should have been a no-hassle evening. But it wasn't. It was awful. First of all, Alan had been a former student at the school where both my mom and Frank worked, and while he was never one of their students, that fact put a certain spin on the situation, in their minds at least, and that made them a bit uncomfortable. Then, Alan pulled out an entire ounce, which we had just bought, and threw it on the table. When your familiarity with pot comes from the occasional joint, an ounce is a prodigious amount, and I could see my folks' eyes bugging slightly as my mom nonchalantly asked how long it took us to go through a bag like that. Oh, about a week, Alan replied, which wasn't even close to true. 10 days, minimum. Oh, great, I thought. Then we pulled out the bong, which is something neither of them had seen, and I could tell the whole scene was starting to seem more serious to them than they originally thought. And teaching your own mother how to use a bong is not something I would recommend doing. On top of everything else, I was already stoned and somewhat paranoid, and I just couldn't relax. I kept waiting for them to catch up and show signs of being stoned, but my mom, at least, held on to her control as tightly as she could, which just made me more uptight. Then she topped it off by asking all kinds of drug questions. Do you like drugs? Why do you do them? Where do you get them? Are there other drugs you've taken or are interested in taking? It was like getting stoned with the Gestapo. Frank, at least, chilled out and was soon stuck, red-eyed and grinning, in one of those low-slung, impossible-to-get-out-of chairs that were so popular in the 70s. They finally went back upstairs, and we all agreed it was an interesting experiment that was never to be repeated again. I realized later that the Ian Dury punk anthem, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, delineated perfectly the areas of your life that you should never expect to share with your parents, no matter how cool they are. Drinking margaritas and listening to the Beatles together was one thing. When it came to smoking pot and listening to Nina Hagen, I was on my own.
Pixel space, turn me on, the dun-a-dun. na 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 na